spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light. This program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our story today is a dramatization by Morton Wishengrad of Isaac Loeb Peretz's Sabbath fantasy, The Treasure, and is presented in observance of the centennial of the birth of I.L. Peretz. Those who sanctify the Sabbath shall rejoice in thy sovereignty, and they shall enjoy thy goodly bounty. Thou didst call the seventh day the grace of days, in memory of the work of the Creator. The Sabbath is the crown of the week. When the sun shines on the Sabbath day, the sun is blessed. And when the rain falls on the Sabbath day, the rain is blessed. And when the good man keeps the Sabbath day and performs no manual labor and rests and renews himself and his family with the good songs and the tender prayers and the inner delight that comes of faith and serenity, then the man is blessed and his family is blessed. And even if the man is poor, even if the man is very poor, like Chaim the woodcutter, and must share a room 4 yards square with a wife, with 8 children, with the baking heat of summertime... Now, I've changed my mind. To sleep in summertime in a room 4 yards square together with a wife and 8 children is anything but a pleasure, even on the Sabbath. They're all asleep. Hush. Quiet. Make no sound. Sleeping is a poor man's pleasure, sometimes the only one. So, don't wake them. Chaim the woodcutter can't sleep. 10 people in a room 4 yards square in the summertime. That's too much. There are too many. Air. Man has to breathe. Chaim the woodcutter rises hot and gasping from his bed. The night is half through. But he is entirely through with the night. Hastily he pours some water over his fingertips. He mumbles the prayer.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam asher bitzvanu bitzvosov.
And Chaim the woodcutter flings on his tattered bathrobe. And he escapes barefoot from the parched Gehenna of his dwelling. And Chaim the woodcutter steps barefoot into the street. Purify our hearts that we may serve thee in truth. Chaim the woodcutter walks soundlessly down the street. All is quiet. All the shutters are closed. Oh, it is still, so still. And over the sleeping town stretches a distant, serene, and starry sky. Of all the 24 hours, this is the stillest hour. No cricket sings, no bird calls, no leaf rustles. Silence and vastness and sleep are upon the earth. And Chaim the woodcutter looks up in the night, and he feels as if he were alone with God, blessed be the name. And looking up at the sky, Chaim says,
Lord of the universe, you hear me? It is I, Chaim the woodcutter. Now is the time to hear me. We're alone. You and I, we are together. Oh, Lord. I'm so poor. Bless me with the treasure out of thy treasure house.
How many times has Chaim spoken these words in his heart? But now he has dared to say them openly.
Bless me with the treasure out of thy treasure.
He wants to say more, but he stops. His mouth is open for speech, but no word comes. For there in the night, he sees something.
It's coming toward me.
It was.
It gives off a light.
So it did.
It's a little flame. A flame that moves.
It moved rapidly.
Well, it must be a treasure.
A treasure. Indeed, it was a treasure, disguised as a flame and making a sound. A rolling, clinking, beckoning sound.
I am the woodcutter. I am yours. Come, take me.
Chaim is about to pursue the flame when he remembers.
No. It is the Sabbath. One must not run. I will walk toward it.
So he walks toward it. One, two, three, four, five steps. And the little flame, does the little flame wait? Oh, no. The little flame moves further away. The distance between them does not increase, but neither does it decrease. The distance between them remains the same. If Chaim takes a walking step, the little flame takes a rolling step.
Chaim, the woodcutter!
Chaim, don't be a fool. No one's looking. Take off your bathrobe. Take it off and jump and throw it over the flame.
Why doesn't he do it? It's a simple thing. Why doesn't Chaim the woodcutter do it?
No, it's the evil inclination speaking in me. It wants me to run on the Sabbath. It wants me to jump.
Chaim refuses to be tempted. He will not jump. He will not run. He throws his tattered bathrobe over his arm and walks very slowly with unhurried dignity. The proper way to walk on the Sabbath. And this is the way Chaim the woodcutter walked in his bare feet after the rolling flame. Of a sudden, all the crickets woke up and began to talk about it. You could hardly blame them. The leaves on the trees were interested. They began to rustle, even though there was no wind. And first a night bird sang. And then a morning bird answered, although it was not yet morning. And Chaim kept walking. And the little flame kept rolling. Allowing the distance never to increase and never to decrease. And it seemed as though the night bird was singing, Ba'olam haba, Shabbat menucha, Chevlei Moshiach ben David ba. In the world to come, a restful Sabbath awaits you. Heed not the pains, for the Son of David comes. And of what is Chaim the woodcutter thinking?
If the flame would only stop.
And why is he thinking this?
Treasure. Little treasure, I ask God for you. I need you. It's hard to be a woodcutter when you're no longer young, when the muscles are stiff and the bone is dry and brittle, when the oil is gone from the marrow and the step is no longer brisk. Treasure, please stop. I need you.
Now, mind you, Chaim only thought this. Well, actually, he only half thought this, for it was rather self-pitying and a rather self-righteous speech, and Chaim wasn't really like that.
It must be the excitement.
It was exactly that, the excitement. And the thought of his wife.
Eight children. Especially when you're poor, eight children take something out of a woman.
Well, it was a sound observation.
She deserves a new dress.
He was a generous man.
A string of pearls. That's what she deserves.
And would you or I say no to that?
And the children. They ought to be sent to a better school. There's the eldest, a fine girl. But even a fine girl needs a dowry.
Yes, she was an excellent girl. A girl with long, long plaited hair and eyes. Eyes like a fawn. The thought of his undowried daughter became unendurable.
I'm trying to think this through. God. Oh, Lord, my God, forgive me if I'm wrong. But don't you think it would be, knowing me as you do, and knowing my circumstances so well? Because, after all, how did such circumstances come about, if not because of you? In short, don't you think it would be a meritorious act if I should pounce upon the treasure once and for all?
There was no answer.
God, you heard what I just said, didn't you? I understand. It must have been the evil inclination in me. It's always putting words into my mouth.
And so Chaim did not jump. Chaim did not pounce. Chaim did not run. Chaim the woodcutter merely kept his tattered bathrobe over his arm and walked. Walking with the dignity that becomes a man who honors the Sabbath and will allow no temptation to interfere with his delight and his devotion. And the little flame. The little flame led him on and on. Followed and following, the flame and the man, they twisted with the road and crossed the fields and skirted the meadows, and the little flame laughed. And Chaim the woodcutter saw the distance grew no longer between them and grew no shorter. And so Chaim stopped.
Lord of the universe, of whom are you making trial? My name is not Job. I'm not a saint. Why do you try me? Why do you tempt me? If you mean to give me the treasure, give it to me.
He looked toward the flame. He did not walk. He merely raised his leg as if to take a half step. And the flame did not move. So Chaim took a long, vigorous step forward. And the flame? The little flame barely moved.
All right, Time. All right.
The treasure was only a little way off. He took the robe from his arm. The treasure was in his grasp. He had only to go a few steps further.
I know that sound.
He certainly did, and the dog who made it.
It is the dog of the village of Visoka.
Sure enough, there were the cottages of the peasants of Visoka. That dog was not barking for nothing.
No. It is a sign. Perhaps a sign from God that I've gone a Sabbath day's journey and may go no further.
It is a transgression to walk more than a day's journey on the Sabbath.
For the Sabbath was ordained for rest.
Exactly, and to walk more than a day's journey...
You'd hardly call that resting, would you? I've gone a full Sabbath day's journey. Not one step further from this point, I turn back.
The white patches were twinkling in the dew of the morning, but they did not make a sound. Chaim was being tested.
Evil inclination? Do you hear me, evil inclination? You won't lead me astray. God didn't send this treasure, you did. The treasure's not a godsend. God does not make sport of us. It is the work of a demon.
He was angry with himself and angry with a little flame, even though he knew it was a treasure. He turned on his heel and walked briskly back to his town. And Chaim the woodcutter made up his mind to say nothing about it.
In the first place, they won't believe me.
Which was true.
In the second place, if they believe me, they'll laugh.
But he knew they wouldn't really laugh. Were they pagans?
But what have I done to be proud of? The Creator knows how it was, and that is enough for me. Besides...
Besides? What was there besides?
My wife.
Oh, certainly. No one to be overlooked.
She might be angry with me.
With good reason, of course.
The children are certainly naked.
Yes, it was a terrible shame.
And barefoot, poor thing.
8 pairs of barefoot feet.
Not a real problem in the summertime.
But quite another thing in winter.
8 pairs of new shoes. They'll feel badly because they'll feel cheated. Now, I can't tell them what happened. They'll hold it against me, and children should not be made to transgress the commandment to honor one's father.
It was a subtle piece of reasoning.
I won't say a word about what's happened.
He made an even greater decision.
I won't even remind the Almighty of it. If I've really been good, the Almighty will remember without being told.
And thinking this, Chaim was conscious suddenly of a strange inward calm, of a delicious sensation in his limbs.
What is money after all? Money is dross.
And being a little prejudiced, he said,
riches may even lead a man from the right way.
Oh, Chaim the woodcutter, Chaim, my good, sweet simpleton. Doesn't poverty also lead a man from the right way?
I feel like praising God.
Oh, the simpleton. The praise was already spoken in his shining face and the lift of his hands, in the way he walked and the way he talked and the way he thought and breathed. And all this on the good Sabbath. Behold, I am prepared to sanctify the Sabbath, as is written in the Torah. And Chaim returned townward, and the little flame followed him and returned townward. And the distance neither diminished nor increased. It was as though the flame were taking a walk and he were taking a walk. Just taking a little walk in honor of the Sabbath. Oh, he was glad. So glad in his heart. The sky pales. The stars begin to fade. The east flushes. A narrow pink stream flows over his head. And then... the little flame. It was flickering down the street. Down the street. There was his house. There was the door he had left open.
The treasure is running into my own house. But I must not run. It is unseemly to run on the Sabbath. I refuse to run. I will walk with Sabbath dignity.
So he walked with barefoot dignity down his street, to his house, through the open door, into the room 4 yards square where his wife and 8 children were fast asleep. And he peeked under his bed.
It's under the bed.
Spinning like a top.
Round and round. Round and round.
Spinning like a top.
But it stays under the bed. It stays in one place.
His heart was beating fast. He took his robe, his tattered robe, and he threw it under the bed over the spinning flame, and he covered it.
Hush.
They mustn't be disturbed. He sat down on his bed. He laid his head on the pillow, and he made a vow.
I won't say a word about this. Not a single solitary word, or even half a word, lest it cause a desecration of the Sabbath.
Now, it was a mighty decision, but it had to be taken, because, well, he looked at his wife.
How could it be possible for her to hold her tongue?
And if she could not, how could it be expected of the children?
They'd want to count the treasure.
Why not? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't I? Wouldn't anyone?
The secret would be out of the house, into the street, into the house of study, and the house of prayer. No one would do anything but talk about the treasure. No one would pray. No one would even wash his hands or say grace. I and my household would have led half the town into transgression and sin. I am not going to breathe a word about it until after the Sabbath is over.
And so he closed his eyes and pretended to be asleep. Mi yagur be'achalecha, who will dwell in my tents and on my holy mount? He who is righteous and merciful and whose words are truth. This was the reward of Chaim the woodcutter. He waited the whole Sabbath day, and when the Sabbath had departed and evening had come, he stooped down and lifted his tattered bathrobe, and there lay a sack.
Coins. Dozens of gold coins.
And he lived happily ever after, only his wife kept throwing it up to him.
Lord of the world! How could a man have such a heart of stone as to sit a whole summer day and not say a word? Not to his own wife. Not a single word. And there I was, crying over my prayer, as I said, God of Abraham, crying so. But there wasn't a penny left in the house. Not one single word.
Then Chaim, the retired woodcutter, Chaim, who was now the great philanthropist and public benefactor, Chaim, whose children wore shoes in the winter, and whose eldest daughter, the one with the long braids and the fawn's eyes, the one who had made such a fine match, then this same Chaim would smile to his wife.
Who knows? Perhaps it all went off so well because of the prayer you said. Who knows?
And, that's something to consider. Because after all, who really knows?
you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Maurice Samuel, distinguished author and lecturer. Mr. Samuel.
Of the three giants who dominate Yiddish literature, Mendele Moches Sforim, Sholem Aleichem, and Yitzhak Leibush Peretz, the most fascinating is the last mentioned. They were all geniuses of the first order, but Mendele and Sholem Aleichem played their roles straight. Mendele was a satirist and Sholem Aleichem was a humorist, and they knew it. But Peretz did not know what he was, and this makes him a peculiarly enigmatic and fascinating figure. Primarily, he took himself to be an askan, a public worker, an awakener of the Jewish people, a modernizer of its life, an educator. 9/10 of his literary activity he devoted to these roles. He produced in Yiddish textbooks in mathematics, sociology, history, politics, physics, everything in a high school curriculum. He wrote exhortations to the Jewish masses to leave the ghetto, to join modern movements, to become part of the contemporaneous world. And the remaining 1/10 of his energies he gave to pure literature, to drama, poetry, and folk tales. Of that remaining 1/10, 1/3 is immortal. So that if you wanted to be quite mathematical, you might say that Peretz achieved immortality with 3 1/3% of his activities. No one today reads his textbooks, his exhortations, and his anti-Zionist editorials. His belief that Polish Jewry had a future has been tragically disproved by events he could not have foreseen. But very few read even his dramas and his poetry. What he is remembered for, and will always be remembered for, is his restatement of the old Hasidic folklore. There is the paradox of it. While he wanted the Jews to modernize, he himself was achieving immortality absent-mindedly by his occasional pieces on the Orthodox and the traditional. He pleaded with the Jews to Europeanize, to Westernize. But the most attractive of all his works sprang from his love of that which he considered outlived, parochial, and almost an archaeological curiosity. In short, one might hold up Peretz as a curious instance of the popular tag, man proposes, God disposes. Peretz aimed at one thing, Providence destined him for another. And, as it happens, Providence knew best.
Thank you, Mr. Samuel. Our Eternal Light drama today, The Treasure, was written by Morton Wishengrad and was presented in observance of the centennial of the birth of Isaac Loeb Peretz. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Mamorski. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical music. Roger DeCoven was featured as Chaim, and Alexander Scorby was the narrator. The production was under the direction of Fred Way. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.